So welcome everybody. This is our second conference call for BF 101, which is Basic Recreation Finances. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territories of the Kwamundun First Nation and Tahn Kwachin Council. And I'm pretty excited. I love February. We start getting a little bit more daylight in the Yukon. Yeah, it was minus 30 this morning at my house, but it was only minus 14 yesterday afternoon and sunny. So I'm getting excited that maybe spring will come sometime, hopefully for you guys in Manitoba, a bit earlier than us up north. So last week, we talked a bit about some of the financial terms that we use, and we looked at how budgets are a tool for planning and delivering your programs, projects, and events. And this week, we're going to dig a bit more into tracking and reporting on financial information. And it is a little harder to do the required learning activities this week. You don't have to send me the number 4 tracking one. That's optional. If you want me to look through it before you do your report, you can. But if you're not, you don't have to. But I find this is a harder activity because you're imagining what might have happened. Unless, of course, you're in the middle of delivering something that you have been tracking as you go, and you can use that. So we've usually on my calls, we do introductions, a bit of content, and then some discussions. And thank you all for introducing yourselves in the chat. I think given the number of people on our call, it will make it go a little bit faster rather than doing a round of introductions. And then we'll definitely go around, and you'll be able to share a bit from your own perspective. Because as you know, I really believe that this is a great learning opportunity. All of you bring knowledge and experience that we can all learn from. So thank you for joining us today and participating. And as we go around, it's totally up to you if you want to answer a question or not. You're welcome to answer it in the chat, and you're also welcome to pass. Just feel free to participate in the way that works for you the best. So before we get into this week's content, I'd like to just remind you of some of the key things that we do when we're preparing a budget. So a couple of things. Make sure that in your budget you show how you get the total for each line, especially for expenses. So some people have done things in budgets with staff, and that's a couple of calculations. So if you need 2 staff times 5 sessions times $20 an hour, make sure that you show how you're getting that. Because a funder, if you just put a block number in there and don't explain that, a funder won't understand. And some people on a more complicated budget actually will take the notes and list the different staff people, especially if they have different wages or there's different hourly rates or different amounts of time. You can list those in your notes to your budget so you can add extra pages or sheets to show how you get there. If you want to look at some more complicated budgets, both Robin from Marsh Lake and Misha have posted ones that have that type of detail in it. So go ahead and have a look at their posts if you want to see what that might look like. The other thing is that if you're asking for funding, be sure to balance your budget. So make sure that your expenses add up to your revenues, unless you're short revenue, and then you're going to have to show where you're getting that from. But what you don't want to do is ask a funder for $20,000 if your entire budget is only going to cost you $15,000, because they won't understand what you're going to do with that extra $5,000. So you can only ask somebody for the money that you can show or say that you're going to spend. Of course, a lot of funders, and Rhonda doing finances, you might know this, I'm sure you work with grants and other contributions. Funders are usually pretty flexible, that if you find you run into a problem, like let's say your travel costs more than what you think it's going to cost, I think the ones I've worked with at least are pretty good if you go back to them right away and explain, I need to change my budget and why. So, you know, a lot of these costs can be pretty variable. The third, if you choose to show those in-kind expenses or in-kind revenues, something that somebody is giving you to offset something that might cost you money, make sure that you do both. So if you add, if you say, I'm going to get, or the facility is going to cost me $3,000, okay? But I don't actually have to pay that money because the group that owns the facility or the community that owns the facility is going to let me use it for free. So you have to do one of two things. One, just don't put it in there and put in-kind contributions below your budget. Or two, if you put your facility cost $3,000 in your expenses, make sure that you show that $3,000 as an in-kind contribution in your revenue. Rhonda, I just wanted to ask you, do you have a certain way that you handle in-kind with MASRC?
Well, we do have to keep track of it for one of our funding streams, or two of our funding streams. We do keep track of it, so I just have a spreadsheet that I keep it on, and then when they send our reporting spreadsheet, there's just a column we put it in.
So for the staff you work with, they don't need to show it in their budget then, but they need to keep track of it maybe below the budget in the notes or in their tracking or something.
Yeah, in their tracking.
Awesome, that's great. And I think each of your organizations might have different ways of approaching that, but as I believe it was Jacqueline pointed out last call, make sure that you're consistent in how you do things. Might have been a couple of people who pointed that out. But just if you do in-kind one way, always do it the same way. And it is helpful to keep track of, especially when you're using public funds for your programs. So let's explore a little bit about this week's content. We're going to start with slide 15. So I will try and share my slides for you. So just give me 2 seconds to open these. And if you have them open, you can go ahead to slide 15 as well. And you've probably seen these already. So let's imagine that you've prepared your budget, and as everybody said at the end of the call last week, get it approved before you spend anything. So now what you want to do is, when your budget's approved and you're starting to do all those things in the work plan that you would have done in the last learning event, all the things like getting supplies, getting equipment, making arrangements with facilities, once you've done all those, use your budget to make decisions. And track and record what you spend and receive on a regular basis. So when you track money that goes out or money that comes in, it's really helpful to write down the date, any details about it, and the amount. Some organizations might have codes that you need to put with that. So there might be a staffing code, a materials code. If you guys have any specific ways that you track your budget, like if you use codes or anything, maybe you can pop those into the chat so that we can see the different ways that your different organizations and communities might do this. Some people use paper tracking and not an Excel file. In one of the last times I delivered this learning event, somebody said that they always get someone to initial when they've entered something, especially if it's dealing with actual money in their hands, because then it's not just, you know, on them. Somebody else has witnessed or confirmed that they've done it. So if there's two of you working on a program, doing this tracking together might be helpful, but you might want to call them for initials for who's entered it so you don't enter it twice or not at all. Follow your budget and remember that plans can change. So if you need to change your budget, you don't want to do it too often, but if you find that things have changed a lot, it can be helpful to revise the budget. And then when you track your finances, you're not showing your budget, you're showing what actually happens. So a budget is a plan or something that we think might happen, like I might go to the grocery store at 3 o'clock today, but maybe I actually go to the grocery store at 4 o'clock or I don't go till tomorrow. That's the what actually happened. And that's what goes in your tracking sheet in your financial report. So a budget looks at what you think might happen versus what actually does happen. So I'm going to pause for a moment. We're going to do our first round of questions. And again, if because we've got quite a few people on the call, if we can keep our time to about 10-15 seconds each. And if you don't want to share, feel free to pop in the chat as well or just say pass. So my question is, actually I've got a hands up question, so I'm going to have to stop presenting so I can see hands. So remember, star 2 is hands up if you're on a phone. So hands up if you track expenses and revenues for your programs and events using a spreadsheet. You can either say yes in the chat or see if you can raise your hand on your computer. Let's see how many. I can see 1, 2. Anyone else waving their hand? 3, 4. Yeah, I've got some yeses in there. That's great. So is there anybody who doesn't? Okay, so hands down, is there anybody who uses something other than a spreadsheet to track the money in and the money out? And you can either unmute and speak up, or you can pop in the chat, or you can wave at me. Okay, I see silence. I hear silence. So I'm guessing that you, those of you who use, most of you use spreadsheets. So there's definitely many different ways to track finances using spreadsheets, even printing one out like the template that I gave you and using a pen and paper. Some people just do that. Some people use software, different software for that. What you use is probably dependent on the size of your organization, on your budget, and also on the role that you play in your organization. If you're mostly delivering programs, somebody probably else doing a lot of that tracking for you. But tracking is really important because that's how you're going to calculate your actual revenue and expenses. And this information you need for the financial reports that you have to do either at the end of a project, at the end of a program or an event, at the end of an operating year. Sometimes you have to do interim or midpoint reports as well. So we're going to look at two more slides here, and then I do have a question for everybody to jump in and answer. So let me just pop this in back in here. Okay, so we've done once your budget is approved. We've talked about tracking. And we've talked about how you record your finances. And you can see that I provided, if you want to, there's a fillable tracking template that you can use online if you want to try using it. You can also download it and change it into your own format if you need one, or use your own. It's totally up to you. So you can see here that once a program or event ends, before you prepare your report, make sure all your bills are paid. Record all your in-kind contributions. So you want to do all of these things that you can see on the screen before you start to prepare your financial report. If you don't record all of them in a tracking sheet, your financial report might be incomplete. It might show that you if you don't have all your bills or your invoices recorded, it might show that your expenses are less than what they actually are. That can sometimes be a problem if you're reporting to funders as well. So make sure everything's done first. And then remember that a budget is in this box here. A budget shows what you think you're going to do, and a financial report shows what you did do. So if you imagine a sandwich, okay, so let's think of, I don't know, my granddaughter likes peanut butter sandwiches. So let's think of a sandwich, 2 pieces of bread and something in the middle. The stuff in the middle is your program or your event. There's a piece of bread on one side and a piece on the other side, so a budget and a financial report, and you put it all together and that's the whole package. So that might be an odd way of thinking about it, but it just kind of came to my mind. Okay, so slide 19 explains how to go about preparing a financial report. So what you want to do is you can follow these steps. This is a really good slide to help you with your required learning activity that is due on Sunday. So you want to use your budget and your completed tracking sheet. And then you have to calculate the actual amounts, which is the same as the total amounts, for what happened for each category. And then you would list your total revenue categories and your total in your expense categories. So if you can see in this one here, this one has just the actual. Some people show a financial statement with what you thought would happen, the budget in one column, and then your actual in another one, because it can show something called variance. Variance just means the difference between what you thought would happen and what actually did happen. And when you subtract your total expenses, which usually comes at the bottom of your report, from your total revenue that's usually at the top, that's you're going to get your net income. And if it's positive, that means you made money. And if it's negative, that means you lost money. And in some of your organizations, your programs might lose money and they're covered from somewhere else. So just make sure you talk to your financial person about what is expected for you from your budget. So if you need any extra help with this required learning activity, last year I created a little YouTube video, and so you can watch that for how the tracking works. So before we move on, I haven't used these words yet, but we're talking a lot about who does what with finances and what you're responsible for. So I have a question, and I'm going to ask you to either choose to pop your answer in the chat, share your answer when we come around to you in the circle, or say pass if you want to listen to what other people say. And Rhonda, again, not to put you on the spot, but as we're working backwards, I'll start with you, but let me pop the question in first so that you can read what it is. And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer here. This is something for you to think about, and think about with whoever oversees your finances too. So what does financial authority and accountability, two different words, authority, accountability, what do they mean and how are they different? So feel free to pop in the chat, but otherwise we'll go from Rhonda to Quentin to Nolan and then to Kaylee. And again, you can pop your answer in the chat, you can listen, you can share, you can pass, up to you. So, Rhonda, I know you've probably got more financial expertise than most people on the call, so maybe I'll ask you to jump in first.
Okay, well, I would say financial authority is the person who makes the decision, who has the ability to say yes or no to your budget, yes or no to grants you're applying for, just the whole, in general, like, in charge. And accountability would be answering to that person on how you spent your budget or where the money went or what was done with it.
That's great. So it sounds like in that relationship between authority and accountability, there's different people and different roles involved in what sort of falls on your plate.
Yeah, it would depend, on, I guess, on each organization. Like ours, Mel is the final authority. We have to go through her, and I'm kind of the accountability. Like I'm the one chasing people for receipts and putting the bank statements and the Visa statements and everything together. So I'm more accountability and she's the authority.
Great. That's a good way to explain it. It's a good concept to think of because it helps us understand how we all fit into this financial piece. So let's go to Quentin. Quentin, do you want to weigh in on, what the financial authority and accountability mean and how they're different? And again, you can pass if you want to. It's totally up to you.
Yeah, I'm just going to pass on this one since it's not really something I need.
Okay. If anything comes to mind, go ahead and pop it in the chat because, sometimes listening, to me, these two words sound almost even the same, so it's hard to sort of figure it out. So thank you. Nolan, did you want to add anything to what Rhonda said?
No, I'll just pass.
You just listen. Okay, that's great. Kaylee, how about yourself? Do you have any thoughts on accountability and authority and what they mean?
I was the same thing as everyone else is saying, that the financial authority is who has, like, the last say and what, like, the last say and everything, and then accountability is, like, the people keeping track of the actual, like, spending and whatnot that goes on.
So would you say that you have accountability, too? Like, do you have financial accountability?
Well, for preparing the budget for our trip, yeah, I would say so, but, like, we're not the final, like, end, making sure everything is spent the way it's supposed to be. But, like, we just do the budget for our trip.
So your accountability, then, is to follow the budget that you have, right, as best as you can?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good, because that sort of shows how you fit into maybe what Rhonda does. So you have your own budget for a program or an event or a trip out to a community, and it's kind of expected that if your accommodation is going to cost you $200, that you don't go and stay in a $500 hotel, right?
Yeah.
So that's accountability, too. Thanks, Kaylee. Okay, let's go. Josh, did you pop in the chat? I've got Josh, Jasmine, Carrera, and then Caden, and I can see some people popping in the chat, but Josh, I'll let you jump in if you want.
Yeah, I'm definitely more on the accountability side when it comes to finances. I don't really have any say in how our budget's set out, and I have no authority over sort of the policy of how we use our spending. And really, when it comes down to the accountability side, it's just my job to make sure I'm spending the money the way it should be spent and spending the amount that I want to.
That's great. So you still have a role to play as far as the financial management in your organization, but it's more accountability than authority. Thanks, Josh. Let's go to Jasmine and then Carrera. Do you guys have anything to add or any thoughts on that?
I'll just pass. I think everything that I was going to say has already been said.
Excellent. Thank you. Carrera, do you have any other thoughts to add?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in the sense of what I'm hearing about accountability is also transparency. So just the fact that regardless of what your role is, you are obligated to follow whatever procedures or policies are outlined for you. But then you're also obligated to be honest about how you are following those.
Those are some great words. If you're on your computer, can you pop them in the chat? Because transparency is a really good word. It kind of came up probably in the last 20 years as a very important word. And also I like how you use the word honesty as well. So those tie into our conversation around authority and accountability. Thank you. Caden, any thoughts? We'll go Caden, and then Amory, I see that you popped in the chat, and same with Jacqueline. So Caden, any thoughts on how authority and accountability, what they mean or how they're different?
So for me, very similar to what the rest of the MASSC staff or majority of the MASSC staff said. We create a budget for any type of proposal with spending or expenses, and then it goes through an approval process, and then we can go from there. So, like, as you were saying, holding myself accountable and obviously being honest of not too much pre-spending. With our organization, it's interesting. I don't know if anyone mentioned this, but related to the finance or accountability, we have one credit card, which is often in Mel's possession, and Rhonda has info as well. So what I will do, because I'm not everyone's in the same situation, but I can pre-purchase or spend, and then we can do a check rec later. It's difficult sometimes with so many staff to have access to the one credit card. So that's maybe a little bit of a barrier, but it also teaches we learn responsibility and accountability as well. So that's what I would say. And the check signing, definitely authority.
That's interesting about the credit card, because I think there's, 12, 13, 14 staff. And so to track who's used it for what, that can be quite a challenge sometimes. And it is hard for nonprofit organizations to get credit cards. The one that I work closely with in the Yukon, for every single credit card, they have to have $25,000 set aside in the bank. So, you know, not really realistic when you're thinking of 12 staff. So thanks. That's a good addition to the conversation. Amory, I'm not sure if you wanted to jump in, or if I shall read, like you popped in the chat here, authority has more power. So yeah, there's definitely something around a power thing when we're talking about decisions. And accountability means responsibility. I like that. That's great to share that. Jacqueline, I see your hand up and you've popped in the chat. Do you want to weigh in from your perspective on financial authority and accountability?
Sure, but I just had a question because someone brought up the credit card thing. But yeah, I think
from my limited experience, we have a working board. So our staff, like they do all the tracking. Like I just receive a financial report. But from the director, like they also want me to keep them accountable by telling me things, even though they're doing all the work. Like I feel like I don't really check because I'm not like in the process. So I'm not always keeping track of their budget, tracking or anything like that. They do that on their own, but I think they just like to keep me in the loop so that they feel like someone's keeping them accountable. And I guess the question about the credit card was, that conversation came up because we started having a group of having more staff and just the struggle with having one credit card. So we had discussion about every single staff having a credit card. But then you talked about the challenges with nonprofits having other credit cards. So we kind of just thought, is that responsible to have each staff have a credit card? I was curious what other nonprofits do in terms of handling credit cards.
That's a good question. Let's sidetrack over to that question because I think that that's really relevant. Put your hand up if you have an answer for Jacqueline. I can see Misha's got her hand up. Misha, do you want to share your thoughts on the credit card? And anybody else want to jump in as well after Misha?
Yeah, just really quickly, because I was also the treasurer for SASE for a few years. What we did is we ended up, I think, purchasing just a couple prepaid gift or prepaid Visa cards, and we were able to do it that way, I think. And then they just had a smaller amount, but it takes like the board to approve that, and it is a process. But we also had the same issue.
Thanks, Misha. And I was just going to pop in the chat what FASE stands for. So if we're using acronyms, I'll ask you to maybe pop that in. I know what it stands for, but somebody else might not know. Does anyone else want to share their thoughts about credit cards? Like, Rhonda, how do you find one card for everybody versus individual ones?
Mostly it kind of works. Like, Mel holds the card. Often if she's away, she will give the card to me. And with most stuff being online, like, I just have a copy of the numbers in my office so we can order stuff online, pay for most stuff online. And if we're going to do big purchases, like, people will take the card and bring it back. It is frustrating with receipts sometimes because not everybody always understands they need to bring the receipt back. We're also ordering online. They have the number, and then the end of the month I'm chasing, like, okay, I'm missing 10 receipts from the Visa, and trying to track down who spent the money, which does get difficult sometimes. But for the most part, it worked, and we did try to get a second card, but the bank manager was like, well, then you have to split your amount, like whatever our approval amount is, we'd have to split it between the two cards, or one card would have this amount and one card would have X amount, but we couldn't share the balance. It would have to be divided. So it's kind of like, well, that doesn't make sense because then we can't make our bigger purchases or it was. We've tried to get a second card, but I don't think it's going to happen. We just share the one.
Yeah, well, that's great. Hopefully this helps, Jacqueline. I see Melanie has her hand up. So, Melanie, and you're talking from a municipality perspective probably, which is different than a nonprofit, and it's also interesting to hear the differences. So what are your thoughts on credit cards?
And that could also work for nonprofit organizations, right? For example, here we have like two supervisors, one for operation and maintenance and one me for the recreation center events and programs. And we do have spending authority up to $3,000. And we both have a Visa card, and everything that's above it has to go to town hall to get approval, and actually has to also go to a city council. But as long as it's below, we can spend, and then our staff, like I have staff, so that's Darren, our maintenance supervisor, whatever needs spending, they either have to go back to him or me, or we permit whatever needs to be bought, and then you can use our Visa card. But we have to give approval for this. We cannot just go and spend. We have no authority for that. But this is how we do it.
Right. So there's lots of, there are different situations, and I think a lot of it depends on the type of organization you are, and then different authorities come with that. So Misha's also popped a bit more in the chat about how the prepaid credit cards work, because that's an interesting sort of approach as well that I hadn't heard about before. Let's keep moving along then. So we've got to Jacqueline, which is Northwest Territories. April, I noticed you popped something in the chat. You're welcome to unmute if you want to add to the question. My mouse has stopped working, so I'm just going to have to move my, this is going to look like I'm moving, but I'm actually got to move my computer so that I can use my pad on my screen rather than my actual mouse. So hold on one sec. There we go. That's better. And then we'll go to Holly. If Holly, you wanted to add anything, so let's do, April, do you have anything to add to what you popped in the chat?
No, that's it.
That's great. Thank you. I'm just going back up to where it was. And I think we, oh yeah, you said it, responsibility is accountability about where the money's going and making sure you have proof of where it's going. So Rhonda mentioned those receipts and tracking them down, so thank you. Holly, would you like to unmute and add anything on your thoughts about authority or accountability, or do you just want to listen to everybody?
Listening to everybody is great. I'm still really new to this. I know the authority here would be our SAO, and I would be like doing the accountability, the bookkeeping, and then I would check in with a recreation manager as I am a trainee. But I really liked what everybody had to say. It gave me much more knowledge about what to do next time or, you know, for in the future. So thank you all.
That's great. Thanks, Holly. And it is a big learning process. Holly used the acronym SAO, which for those of you who are in the Yukon, I'm not sure what you use in Manitoba, but SAO is like Senior Administrative Officer. And sometimes in the Yukon, we use CAO for Chief Administrative Officer, and that would be the person in charge of the municipality. So definitely that person would hold the authority. So thank you. Akisia, I think I saw that you popped in the chat, but it's a little far back for me. Did you want to jump in? We'll go to you, and then Melanie, Robin, Misha, Myla, and Chanel.
Yeah, I had said that financial authority, at least in my kind of limited view, is someone who has control over approving the budget and the expenses and the revenue sources. And then accountability is more people who are, you know, running the program like me, who are ensuring that their reporting is accurate. And also that I tend to suggest things. I'm like, okay, well, can we buy these supplies for this thing and then get it approved? My accountability is making sure that I, if they say, yeah, you can spend this, you know, $100 on art supplies, to make sure that I spend it on that particular category or stay under the budget that they approve of.
That's right. So especially in a nonprofit, there's different layers, right? Like you have a board that you're accountable to, and then you have your executive director. And so there's different ways to do things, and you can sort of suggest, but you might not have that authority to make that decision. So thank you for that. We'll go Robin, Misha, Myla, Chanel. And Robin, you popped an interesting thing in here because you're talking about funders and financial authority. Do you want to explain that a little bit more? I think that that's really an interesting angle.
Yeah, like I have some authority under some funds, but I think like ultimately it's the funders who have authority. Like I can build a budget for something, and if it doesn't get approved, then I don't have authority to put on that program at all. Or for the example that I use is for the Youth Investment Fund, and we can only pay facilitators $25 an hour up to 8 hours a day. So I don't have the authority to pay them more or anything like that because the funders have set that. And they're the authority in that regard. And I'm responsible to stick to the budget that I've set out and to make sure that things are going along smoothly. But if I was irresponsible with our funds and for some reason the organization went bankrupt, the board is ultimately financially liable and responsible for the like finances of the organization.
Yeah, that's, you know, a couple of good points there. One is that funders often set what you can actually do. In some cases, if you're using multiple sources of funding, you might be able to increase that and show where the extra amount is coming from. But the other thing that Robin just pointed out, and I know there's a lot of you on this call who work with nonprofit organizations, your board of directors are ultimately responsible or have the ultimate accountability and authority for what happens in your organization. And if something goes wrong, they can be liable or on the hook. So any nonprofit organization should have board and officers or board, what is it? No, D&O, board directors and or directors and officers liability insurance. Sorry, there's an acronym for it, but I can't remember what it is. But it's an insurance that actually covers it so that those board members who are volunteering their time aren't on the hook if something goes wrong. And there have been cases, if you looked it up, where without that insurance, an individual who's on that board, if the executive director or the organization loses $100,000 or is irresponsible with that or owes it or something like that, those people sitting on that board could be responsible for paying out of pocket without that insurance. So really important thing from a financial perspective to make sure that your directors, your officers, your board are covered through insurance. Jacqueline, I just see your hand go up, so I'm pretty sure that's a question about that, so go ahead.
What is the acronym again, sorry?
It's board and directors. I'll send it to you. We do it in another learning event. We have a learning event that's about risk management, especially legal risk. And so we cover that in the one on legal risk. But if you look up board insurance or directors and officers liability insurance, if anybody knows specifically what the term is, please pop it in the chat, or if you know where your organization even gets that insurance, maybe you can pop it in for Jacqueline. That would be great. Misha, did you want to add to the conversation about authority and accountability?
I don't think I have anything to add. Just that, like, even as a contractor for the executive director role for a nonprofit, I also had to get my own insurance to be extra accountable. But otherwise,
I'll yeah. Good. Yeah, there's insurance is a good coverage thing there, too. So now Myla's popped in that they agree with everything everyone else has said. Chanel and Myla are under sort of they're accountable to their CAO, so a little different. Holly's in NWT, Myla's in, and Chanel are in the Yukon, so slightly different terms. But the CAO and finance department have the authority on that. So thank you. And Caden, I see you popped in here about petty cash, and I find that's interesting because I had a question that I was going to hope to get to about petty cash. Do you want to just explain, like, how is looking after petty cash accounts, how does that connect to authority and accountability?
Yeah, I would love to. So it was small amounts, like I said, kind of working, we'll call ourselves a field worker or whatever, youth worker. But it was kind of a petty use for if we need supplies, if we have some activities planned, we need supplies, or we need equipment. So something small purchases are relatively small. We'll say kind of within a 300 or 500 budget, and that's per month, that's monthly. And then we had a food budget, so to provide snacks, meals, et cetera, whatever we needed. And we also had another activity budget for, say, outings. So we would take the youth on an outing monthly or weekly. So kind of three or four, and each program had its own budget. So that gives me the authority, because there is a debrief, so when we close it at month end, or we don't close it, I guess, at year end, but we talk it up every month. So you have that discussion with your supervisor, who has, I guess, the ultimate authority, but they're giving you enough authority to have a small budget to work with, to operate. And it really feels empowering, even that small amount. And if you need more, that's where that discussion comes in. When we're either doing a year-end closeout, we say, hey, this is how the budget went, let's take a look. Or maybe we're not spending enough, and funders don't like that because they're going to give us less next time. So, or hey, we have a little bit more, like we talked about, taking from here and there and spread it around, share a little bit. So I really enjoyed that, and we talked up and we had that discussion, and we are responsible and accountable for those receipts. So that's where it comes into. If we lose a receipt, well, guess where that money's coming from. So I think we had like one or two a year where we get it handwritten, and they had to be very specific. So if we purchase something from the store, we need the receipt. If we order something, we need the receipt with the amount in the item. So it can't be a blank receipt like a debit receipt. We need the full receipt. Be a little more organized. But I felt, I'm going to use the word empowered. I felt really empowered and trusted. So that's my experience.
That's a nice way to feel in an organization too, because you don't want to feel that somebody's second guessing every time you take $5 out to go and buy a pen or something like that. So I think that it's really important to let people understand and act within a certain scope of accountability back to them. So petty cash is definitely one way that some organizations manage small expenses, but also give a little bit of authority to their staff. And you can have as little as $50 in your petty cash, or you can have as much, like you said, Caden, you know, sometimes more than that, $300, $400, $500. So it can vary. So that's great. Let's just cover, I'm just keeping track of the time here. I just want to go through a couple of slides so that you know what to expect for the last part of this learning event. But I really appreciate the conversation. You can see how you can learn from each other, and people have some really good questions. So feel free to also be using the private chat. So on your chat, there's a public and a private one. You can use the private to ask somebody a question directly if there's somebody says something that you'd like to know a little bit more about. Okay, so we're going to go back to the slides here. I'm going to come back to slide, I believe it's 21. Let's just see what opens here. There's slide 20, so the financial reports. Slide 21 shows you three different types of financial statements. There's probably a lot more, but these are the three basic ones that I think are important to understand about. So an income statement, a balance sheet, and a cash flow statement. So an income statement shows your revenue, like your money in, and your expenses or your money out, over a set period of time. It might be for a year, or it might be for a duration of a project or a program. So if I run a project that runs from September to December, I might just show a statement for that time. For the Recreation North training program, I have to do statements every 3 months just to sort of show where we're at. So the difference between your revenue and your expenses are your net income or loss. And obviously we tend to think of net income as being good and net loss as being not so good, but there could be reasons why you end up in different situations, and that's okay too. The next slide, what it shows you is a balance sheet. So a balance sheet is, you may not all work with a balance sheet, but a balance sheet is really important to understand just to understand what your organization looks like. It's a lot harder for those of you who are with municipalities and hamlets. This is a way bigger thing. It might be a little easier to wrap your head around a balance sheet for a nonprofit organization. So a balance sheet shows your financial state, or you could even say financial health, on a certain date. So it doesn't show over a whole year. It says as of March 31st, 2024, this is the financial state of such and such an organization. And you get that state by calculating something called the assets, which is something that you own, either cash, which is short-term, or buildings, or equipment, or computers, things like that are assets. And there's different calculations bookkeepers will do to come up with what that's worth. And then you take away the liabilities. So your liabilities are things that you owe, like maybe you just purchased $25,000 worth of basketball equipment. That sounds like a lot of basketball equipment, but anyways. And you haven't paid the bill yet, but you already have the equipment. Or there might be loans, like the Recreation and Parks Association of Yukon that I work with bought a building, like bought their own office about 5 or 6 years ago. So they have a mortgage, so that is a liability. And then what they do is they look at equity. And equity is the difference. It's your assets minus your liability. And that's kind of like what your worth is. That's a really simple way of explaining it, but just to understand that it's not just cash-based, it's things that you own as well have a value. Okay, so the third type of statement that is helpful to understand is a cash flow. And a cash flow really, it can be very complicated or it can be really simple. It just shows when you think the money is going to come in and when you think the money is going to go out. In a nonprofit, that's hard because sometimes you're already starting your projects before you get all your grant money. So you have to have a certain amount of money on hand to cover those times when your cash flow is low versus when your cash flow is high. So cash flow is a different way of looking at it than what your budget might be. So it's just kind of different. But I have a personal example, so I want you guys just to think through this one. And this is why cash flow is really important. So imagine that you have a friend who you've loaned some money to, and your friend owes you $500, hasn't paid you yet, okay? You haven't been paid through your paycheck yet, and you only have $50 left in your bank account. But you have a $200 hydro bill that's due tomorrow, okay? So you have a cash flow issue. Because you can't pay a $200 electric bill with $50 in your account, and you can't pay it with the $500 that your friend owes you because you haven't got it back yet. So you have a cash flow issue. So cash flow could be something personal, like we only get paid maybe, some people only get paid once a month, and you have to really manage your money in and your money out. And same with organizations. Cash flow issues happen all the time. So money from grants and contracts sometimes come in very slowly. Fundraising isn't always predictable, but you always have bills and you always have staff salaries to pay. So cash flow can really make or break an organization, which can be quite challenging. So we mentioned briefly about petty cash. We've got about 5 minutes left. So I'm just wondering, I'm going to stop presenting. I'm wondering if anybody else wants to jump in, and you can put your hand up if you want to. If you use petty cash and how you manage petty cash in your organization. So is there anybody, I'll just go through the list and just jump in if you want to share. Rhonda, do you guys have a certain way that you deal with petty cash, or do you even use it?
We don't use it. What we will do, it's not really petty cash, but like when they're going on a trip to the community, when they hand in their check request, they'll often put like $75 for meetings or $100 for supplies. So then when I write out their per diem check, I include that money, and then they cash the check, and then they bring me back the receipts and any change they have. So it's not necessarily petty cash that anyone can just go and, like, take $50 to go buy something. It just comes in a check request form for their specific trip.
But that's really helpful to still to have that access to cash, because I imagine you end up in some communities where you need cash, right, for small things. Thanks a lot. So moving on, then, if that's sort of how MASRC kind of deals with it. Jacqueline, do you guys have petty cash? I'll go Jacqueline, April, Holly, and then work my way through. You can pass if you need to, but do you guys use petty cash in your organization, Jacqueline?
Yeah. I think when I was still with the volunteer before I joined the board, I was just in programs for NMM. And if I had to go buy some snacks or, like, rent skis or something, I think I would just have to ask the executive director for that money. So I think they keep track of that money, and then I don't really know how it goes after that. So I don't know what
okay.
I do now, because we have a lot of new staff. I think, like, things are just changing because we never had that many staff before, and now I think we have a new system going, so I'm not sure how they're dealing with petty cash now. But, like, 3 years ago when I was just volunteering, that's what we did.
Okay. So interesting to know if you're responsible, if you're the treasurer and you're responsible for sort of reporting all of that, to know how that system works.
I guess I'll find out. I'll be asking. I have all these questions written down.
Perfect. That's good. We're helping you think through what you need to know. April, how about yourself? You and Holly are both in Hamlet in NWT. Do you guys have petty cash, April? And then Holly, I'll ask you afterwards.
No, I don't think we've ever had petty cash. It's just that we're keeping track of, you know, where all the money's going and coming from. And I've never seen any petty cash anywhere. Other than sitting in the coffee room, that's a little cup that you could put the money in, which could be put towards the petty cash.
Yeah, the coffee jar is a good example of cash, and people take it out to go buy the supplies. So that's one example. But
that's put towards like our. So we're having a Halloween dress contest in the office here, and if that person wins, then we go for the petty cash.
That's great. Thanks, April. Holly, do you know, I know you're really new in your position, do you know if in your hamlet they have petty cash where if you need to go and buy a few small things, you can go and ask for it?
Currently not that I know of. I have to ask Jocelyn about that. What I know we use is honorariums and per diem. That's about it, I think.
Great.
But I will ask.
Okay. Yeah, it's always good to know because you never know when you got to go buy 3 boxes of granola bars, right? And you don't have to ask for a PO number for 3 boxes of granola bars. Thanks, Holly. Acacia, how about for you guys with Elder Active? Do you use petty cash or?
That's a good question. We're actually working on getting a petty cash for our Canada 55 plus game thing. We're be processing the uniform, so we need to create a petty cash in order to do cash payments for when people buy their uniforms. But currently we have no petty cash. When people come in to pay for programs, they have to give me exact change, or I hope that I have some on hand. Basically, I don't really have petty cash, which is a bit frustrating because I think we would definitely need petty cash, but because I don't have control over that through the board has to approve petty cash, and like, the treasurer has to work on that. So it's kind of in the works at the moment.
Right, so you're also talking about a cash box because you're dealing with seniors and elders who might not have a credit card or a check and want to pay you in cash, and then you have to give them change. So that also can be challenging, too. Thank you. Okay, I'll just do one more just so that I don't go over time here. I'll go to Myra has popped in here that they do petty cash for sales of recreation programming and concession items. So Robin and Misha and Melanie, sorry, I'm just going to skip, go ahead and pop in the chat if you want. I just want to respect everybody's time today. So this wraps up our last conference call for this learning event, which is BF101. And you do have a second required learning activity due on Sunday. It's a financial report. And you can prepare a financial report for the budget that you put in. But I think the challenging part is imagining how you spent the money and what actually happened. So if you find it easier to do, use a case study and just do a tracking sheet and a financial budget for the case study. After we finish the call recording, I'm going to step you through, whoever would like to stay on longer, I'll step you through how to do that so that you can work on it. You don't have to stay longer on the call, though. This is absolutely optional. Thanks, Robin, for popping in. Like, petty cash for volunteers is important, too, for small purchases. And Melanie said it, you know, live bands or parties or other events. So thank you for that. After you do your second required learning activity, if you could take a moment to fill out feedback in activity number 7. So I know it might seem like a lot, but after every learning event, I ask you just to pop in. It shouldn't take more than a minute or two to fill out the feedback form. But believe it or not, I actually use that feedback to change how we do the learning events and to think about things. So your feedback is really important to me, and I do use it, so thank you. So next week, this is really important, next week is catch-up, not catch-up, but catch-up week. So what catch-up week means is If you have outstanding required learning activities, you have another week to get them done. There is no conference call next week. So you have a week off from calls. And then our next learning event is RM 101, which is risk management. And it begins on Monday, February 19th. So we will have a conference call that week. RM 101 risk management, you'll be able to use your program that you worked on in PE 101. So hang on to that as well. So what I'd like to do is end the call recording. If you guys can pop in how you might say thank you in your community or in your region, if you know the local traditional language, that's great. If not, if you're, you know, maybe you're Francophone and you say merci or masi, or I'm going to say Cornishish, which is in southern Tishoni. Thank you so much for your time. And please, I'm going to answer, Caden had a question, so I'm going to answer Caden's question first. So anybody who wants to stay on and see how the budgeting, tracking, reporting works, why don't you take a 5-minute break to stand up, stretch, run to the washroom, refill your coffee, and come on back, and then I'll show you that in about 5 minutes. And Caden, I'll answer your question right away, and if anyone else has any questions, you're welcome to hang on. Bye, everybody. At least everybody who's hanging up.